So you've heard about love, you've heard about freedom, now you're going to hear about living. So you can't help but live. Yeah. You have to act. The question is how we live, how we act. So the first point echoes a point that Surata made. Well, we just have to realise we've got a choice. That we don't just get swept along by life, by forces inside us, forces outside us. No, we actually realise, we need to realise we've got a choice. We can make that choice moment by moment. And that involves for us here this weekend actually committing ourselves to living in the light of Buddhist values, committing ourselves to love and freedom, moment by moment, day by day. The second point, life is precious and it's just slipping away. You know, like when we could try to get hold of a fistful of fine sand, it just slips through our fingers, and the tighter we try to hold it, the more it seems to slip away. In Tibetan Buddhism, again and again, we have this exhortation to recognise, you know, we have this precious human life, this precious human body, this precious opportunity not to be lost. Tsongkhapa wrote, "The human body, at peace with itself, is more precious than the rarest gem. Cherish your body. It is yours this one time only. The human form is one with difficulty. It is easy to lose. All worldly things are brief like lightning in the sky. This life, you must know, is the tiny splash of a raindrop, a thing of beauty that disappears even as it comes into being. Therefore, set your goal. Make use of every day and night to achieve it." And in the root verses of the Bardo Tadol, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, the last verse says, "O procrastinating one, who thinks not of the coming of death, devoting yourself to the useless doings of this life, improvident are you in dissipating your great opportunity. Mistaken indeed will your purpose be now if you return empty-handed from this life. Since the holy Dharma is known to be your true need, will you not devote yourself to the holy Dharma even now?" So, this real sense of urgency in how we live, in really making sure we live this life to the full, make the most of it, of this life, this opportunity. And it must be something of a sense of urgency in this way that's brought us all to the Dharma, to wanting to commit ourselves wholeheartedly to living a life in the light of the Dharma, to actually making sense, making the most of our life. But there is a paradox that in having this sense of urgency, in not wanting to waste our life, waste our time, as we engage with this, we can come to realise that what we need to do so urgently is actually to let go, relax into life, open our heart. But again, this paradox, that to be able to do that, to be able to let go into life, to be able to live in that sort of open-hearted way, seems to need wholehearted commitment, seems to need a lot of practice, a lot of training, a lot of preparation. The cultivation of faith, of trust in the process of letting go into this unfolding of life. And another angle on this sense of urgency. We can easily think we've got lots of time, years and years, especially when we're younger, but you know, just look at it a bit closer. You know, we sleep about 8 hours a night. Bit more, bit less. Okay, so that's a third of the day. we sleep. But that's every day. So we spend a third of our life asleep. So that's taken off quite a few years, hasn't it? Then the rest of the time, work. Well, that's hopefully worthwhile. Well, it better be, because that's another third of your life gone. So what about the remaining third? Eating, shopping, washing up, faffing around, reading the newspaper, watching TV. It goes by. So how many hours in a week do we spend actually meditating, studying, reflecting, talking Dharma, performing puja? And how much of the time when we're sitting on the cushion meditating, are we actually meditating and not drifting, planning, daydream? How much of the time when we're performing puja, are we actually performing puja and not, you know, happily off elsewhere? You know, when you start to look at it that way, it's actually, you know, for most of us, only a tiny fraction of our life involved in explicit, real Dharma practice, in the sense of, you know, we're really getting to grips with life. We're really getting to the heart of the matter. And for the rest of the time, life is slipping by. And it does seem, from what one hears, reads again and again and again in the Buddhist tradition, to get anywhere in terms of really living this life fully, truly, deeply, we need to be making sure that the Dharma, Dharmic values that really pervade our whole life, pervade our work, our relationships, the way we go about the countless mundane tasks and activities that fill our life. We really need to make sure those values are there all the time, or more and more of the time. I think, you know, just a slight aside, I think one of the great values of the 4-month retreats that we run at Kukya Loka, you know, is that almost like despite oneself, certainly I found despite myself, I'm actually living with the Dharma, sort of within, as it were, the world of the Dharma for 4 whole months, day after day after day, day. And I've been incredibly grateful for the opportunity that the order, the movement has given me to live a Dharma life, you know, so fully, just for those periods of time, you know, as well as working in a Buddhist centre, working in a retreat centre. Yeah, just so despite myself, I've actually managed to, my laziness and so on, I've actually managed to live a life in sort of something of an ongoing connection with the Dharma. So, yeah, if we are going to really live a Dharma life, if we really are going to be Dharmacharis, Dharma farers, then, you know, that means committing ourselves to cultivating a life informed by love, freedom, by all that the three jewels stand for. It means building a life where these values are alive. So if we are going to be really doing that, well, in that sense, ordination isn't going to change our life that much. You know, if, you know, that's one of the, just to remind you, that was one of the themes, wasn't it, for these talks, ordination's going to change your life. Well, if actually, to prepare for ordination, we're trying to build a life that's imbued by Dharmic values, well, ordination is going to be an affirmation that such a life is already being lived, you know, that we're actually doing it. So, in that sense, ordination isn't going to change our life that much. And that life can, of course, take many forms. We might be living with our family, having a career, living in a community, working in a centre or business, whatever. All the variations on a theme between those two. But whatever form our life takes, our living out of the Dharma life takes, is going to need to be backed up reinforced, you could say given backbone by explicit Dharma practice, by regular meditation, especially when we don't feel like it, by study, puja, Dharmakata, talk on Dharma, retreats, weekends, longer, solitaries. Now we really need to build all of that into our life as much as possible. And as order members after ordination, we really have to make sure we don't forget to go on retreat. Order members do seem to do that. Sort of forget how important it is. I mean, not all, but I've noticed it happens. Order members can forget how important it is just to keep alive the Dharma. You know, just to get away on retreat, to keep doing the Dharma. So, yes, we need to actually get a life that's working for us, allowing us to deepen our going for refuge, deepen our connection with the Dharma, with the values of Buddhism, with love, with freedom. And we do that in the context of the order, in the context of other people. And again, this living in a network of friendships, connections with other people, is another important part of living out this Dharma life. Again, in the Buddhist scriptures, again and again, there's this emphasis on good friends and bad friends, and just how much, you know, we're influenced by other people, by those around us. Something we really need to take into account. Really, you know, have no illusion the extent to which we are influenced by other people. All of us influenced by other people. Much, much more than we probably often want to admit. And we just need to take that into account and make sure we spend enough time around those who are really going to support and encourage our efforts to live close to the Dharma, live close to those values. And again, ordination shouldn't make that much difference in this respect. You know, hopefully we're ordained because we have established that sort of network of connections that's really alive and working for us. So, ordination may not, in some ways, change our life that much. In other ways, it does make a huge difference. I think it can be easy to underestimate just what a difference ordination makes. Just that ritual, public commitment to the Buddhist path, to Buddhist values, it goes very deep, and we just shouldn't underestimate it. I mean, you've probably heard of people who went through arranged marriages, you know, just because they thought they were helping somebody out. But just actually doing that, actually getting married, they found actually they let themselves in for a lot more than they expected. I don't know if you've heard such stories, but it seems very, very common thing. And that's, you know, just a sort of fairly simple ceremony. You know, the sort of ritual commitment that we make, it actually works very deeply, and it does actually make a difference. Not easily explained or defined, but just doing that, performing that act, does go deep. And it can set up a tension between the life that we were living and the life we want to live. And if there's already tensions there, we can sometimes feel them quite a lot more strongly. Just from my observation over the years, you know, come to think if there's actually a very strong tension there in one's life between one's spiritual values and whatever else one's doing, if one can't stand one's work or one's got real difficulties in family or whatever, then actually it's much better to sort that out before getting ordained. Because otherwise ordination can just intensify that tension just because of the way something much deeper in one is touched, so that it can become very painful and difficult. In the same way, ordination can sometimes bring out aspects in ourselves and our lives that we just managed not to face. We've managed to avoid. Again, because one's made that commitment, and particularly in the context of Gukhya Loka in that 4-month retreat, but not just that. Again, it sets up something, a process in us, or it intensifies a process in us that, again, can just bring to the surface those things that we've been ignoring. So, again, it just means it's really important that we really train ourselves well, prepare ourselves well, that there's a really strong foundation, a really strong working life around us, a real momentum to our Shraddha that's going to see us through any difficulties that arise, that see us, enable us to enter into unknown territory in our own being, in our own minds. Another thing, another way in which ordination actually can make a difference is we suddenly experience a new sense of freedom. Again, I've seen it in some people. Suddenly there's this sense of all sorts of possibilities. I could do this, I could do that, I could do that. You know, suddenly there's too many choices. And I've seen people get really confused. They just suddenly realise that the limitations they put on themselves didn't really exist. All these possibilities are there, and there's too many of them. Again, it can be very useful in this way to actually have a life that's really working for us before ordination, and just keep living that life, you know, at least for a year or two after ordination. You know, just sort of get used to being an order member. Get used to actually all that being an order member implies. Because, yeah, it's often, I don't think it is what you think. It isn't what you expect. You know, it's not just a matter of having a new name and a kesa and going to order meetings and reading Shabda and everything else is the same. Something else does come into play. Difficult to pin down, but in other ways, yeah, ordination really does make a difference. So, yes. There can be all sorts of ways in which we live out our Dharma life. Family, career, centre, community, business, as I've said, and countless variations on that theme between all of those. And nowadays there's probably more order members outside the institutions, you know, communities, centres, businesses and so on, than inside, even in Britain. And yeah, all to the good that our order is so much broader, that we are able to encompass so many different lifestyles. Even those working within the centres, communities, businesses, there seems to be these days more interesting comfort, money, talk about things like pensions and so on, all very sensible and reasonable and so on. But yeah, I think there's also a question of where sensible ends and where the pools of worldly values and attitudes begin. And I do think the world, feel that the world needs the Dharma maybe as never before. And I do think it's very important that there are some people who are willing and inspired to work for the order, work for the movement, work in businesses full time for little money. But you know, that this remains a real possibility, you know, that this is one way of living a Dharma life that remains really valued, and that, you know, we continue to value, and that those who do live this life, that life, are really encouraged, supported, valued by those who don't. Just recently I was studying the Udana, a text that gives us a bit of an insight into really early Buddhism, sort of archaic Buddhism. It's one of those texts that, as it were, became set in its form very early on, and in the Udana, in those inspired out-breaths of the Buddha, we just get a real glimpse of the Buddhism of those very early days of the Buddha and his early disciples. And one of the things I noticed studying that, a very strong connection made again and again between outer life and inner states and inner freedom. There was one of the Udanas, one of the verses, was translated, who lives by no craft, unburdened, desiring the goal, with restrained faculties, wholly released, wandering homeless, unselfish, desireless, conceit abandoned, solitary. He is a bhikkhu. So yes, a very different world, very different circumstances, but yeah, just very much there, that emphasis on the value of renunciation, of actually letting go of worldly possessions, desires and so on, and putting living out the Dharma life right at the centre of one's existence. A very big area, a very different world and circumstances, but I think one that we need to give time to explore, and the one that we actually really need to be very aware of in establishing our own ongoing life in the Dharma. This dynamic, this tension between how we live out our life, and the effect of that on our mental states, on our states of mind, and vice versa. And ensure that we're actually setting up a life, a way of living, that we're able to engage with creatively. Now, that we're not just ignoring, if you like, the effect of the world on us. Not trying just to work around things, but we're actually trying to create a life in which we can really work into more and more and engage more and more effectively with in our dharmic values. So living, and living out a Dharma life. A few thoughts, a few questions, maybe not a lot of answers tonight. I'll leave you to work those out for yourselves.